clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
Rainbows high and deep into the end zone, and it is caught. Caught for a touchdown. A leaping touchdown catch.
Here he goes. He'll be chased, and he is gone. 97 yards. Oh, what a way to start.
Does he get both feet in right here at the end, Jim?
What are they going to roll it? He caught it? Touchdown! He did what?
He runs to the 50. He runs to the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
We are seeing another spectacular effort by Marino, who fires. Touchdown!
Oh, that's loose.
Allen steps up.
Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first.
Says a prayer.
Stop it!
Oh, please!
What a catch!
That's insane!
The game's final play is a Wilson lock to the end zone, which is fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who do they give it to?
Go, everybody. I'm going to get on the Friends Fortune win cycle here. I talked about my favorite or most excited about game this weekend being the Vikings and the Chargers. I think Kirk Cousins is going to put up the points that Jefferson can't, or that Herbert can't keep up with. I think we're going to see the year's first 40 burger, and Kirk Cousins is going to have his ninth 400-yard passing day against this Chargers defense.
I don't know if anybody saw this, but FanDuel cashed out a ton of bets that was every game in the 1 o'clock and 4:30 window to every team to score a field goal. I think we're going to go to just the 1 o'clock window, but I think every team in the 1 o'clock window is going to score a touchdown this week. So if that's a bet on FanDuel, I would take it for like $5, though. Don't go crazy with it.
Welcome to Simultaneous Catch, folks. I'm Adam Jeffrey Rossi.
I'm Josh Lappin.
I was wrong.
Not everybody scored a touchdown. I know Washington
there were three teams
didn't.
That did not. Washington is one. The Tennessee Titans are another. And the Atlanta Falcons are also another
Titans.
One. So, yep.
Oh, and the Falcons.
Yeah, they only got a couple field goals in that game.
Okay.
Obviously,
I like that. I like that Friends Fortune. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I what's funny is afterwards I was like, this isn't as bold as I thought it was. Cause
no, I mean, like, I hear you, but I like it.
Yeah, it was fun.
I wouldn't, if that happened, I wouldn't be like, come on.
You'd be like, okay.
I think, you know, saying that everyone in the first quarter scores a touchdown, I feel like that's big.
I also forget that, like, there are a lot of teams and games where people just kick a lot of field goals, you know what I mean? And they don't ever score touchdowns, so it's fine. Anyway, you obviously did not get yours either. Did he go for 400 yards still?
Yeah, we'll talk about the Vikings later.
Right.
It's in the rundown.
Welcome into the show, folks, where Josh thinks that I secretly have a worse life for being friends with him because I accidentally made a joke a couple days ago, and he was upset with me.
Well, I wasn't upset with him. I just thought about it a lot.
So here's the thing. I actually can't think of any way my life is worse off for having you in my life.
You know,
so.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate you making it publicly known as well.
Like I said, and if for those of you who don't know this, there is one way, and it's that until I met Josh, I had never lost a game of Disney Scene in my entire life, and now I've lost multiple
times.
Guys,
I'm just saying, for everyone listening, I kind of still call bluff on that because it's not –
listen.
He talks a real hard game,
right,
and then he just doesn't
back it up.
Right, but
that's because I played against you and like five other people. That's
but
bad odds.
You don't have to. That was one time.
Okay, well, regardless, I'm really good at Disney Cena. You guys,
Josh. More than anything, I won't challenge your Disney Cena skills.
Okay,
I will challenge your family. Just must be really bad.
Okay, if my family's listening. Yeah, kind of. Anyway, just kidding. My family doesn't always listen to the show, so they probably don't listen to this. But anyway, let's get into some rant, rave, recall. What you got this week for me, pal?
All right, guys. I'm doing something new. I'm doing rant, rave, recall, adding a new.
Whoa.
We're going to do a little bit of rue. We're a little rueful. We're just now.
What does that mean?
It can, like, we're just really... We're, like, really deeply sad.
Oh, okay. Rant, rave, recall, rueful.
It could also be a recall,
How
I guess.
How long did you search for an R word that fit what you
I'm
wanted
I'm not going
to
lie. I Googled it.
It's fine.
I went to, like, a thesaurus site, and I was like, Word meaning words, sad with R.
With R.
And there aren't a lot of great ones. I searched that up. Which is why I went for Rue.
I search that up all the time when I'm working and doing grant writing. I'm like, what's a word for artsy that's not artsy?
All right.
Rueful.
I'm really actually excited to get your thoughts on this.
Okay.
I'm rueful because, man, what a bad week for the Chicago Bears organization. The week was, it was a gauntlet.
Oh, yeah.
All the drama that I still don't fully understand about their defensive coordinator having to step down and away from the organization. There were like internet rumors about FBI things and getting involved. And I don't know if any of that's true, so I don't even want to get into it. But still, he's had to step down. Then something weird happens in the organization and they lose all this equipment. And that is just stolen or mistaken or something. I, again, don't really know what's going on because of internet rumors and people just, I don't know. Then Justin Fields comes out and talks about, you know, how he's robotic and it might be because of the coaching staff. You know what? I don't blame him for what he says. I mean, he's a young guy. You know, I think he was just speaking honestly or what he was thinking in his mind. I don't think he intentionally was like, you know what? I don't believe in this coaching staff and they're holding me back and everything. But then he comes out and he's like, you know what? I'm just going to play like me. And it's bad. And if that's, If Justin Fields playing just on instincts is 50% completion percentage, you know what? He had 40 yards on the ground. That was good to see him running a little bit, but it's not the same. Maybe this is the recall, and it's that I don't think I believe in Justin Fields anymore. I don't think I believe in him anymore.
And that makes me rueful.
Yeah. So, you know, when that draft season, which, man, like looking at that class as a whole, you're like, rough. Ooh, yeah, it's not rough. That great.
I'm sure you probably saw the same post where it was like, let's look at this draft class again that had so much promise. And it's like all these names that are just not.
That you were like, yeah, like this is really exciting.
But, and that's what happens in the NFL, right? Like you have these drafts where a certain position is strong and now you look back at it 3 years later and it's not. Like that happens in the sport so often, right? So nothing's a sure deal.
Yeah, Fields, since he took over, and I get, you know, I think Chicago is a difficult organization. I'm not going to be like, give him a pass for that. It's been that way for a long time. But Fields, since coming in, is 5-23 as a starter. That's not good. He leads the league in sacks taken when he has 4-plus seconds in the pocket, so he's just not seeing anything develop. And I feel like, you know, we saw so often last year they took off and had really amazing gains and whatnot. That's not happening. I have a really hard time believing that the coaching staff's like, don't do that at all. You have to stay there. I just don't believe that because they know that's going to be their best success for winning. He has the lowest passer rating in the fourth quarter. So when the rubber meets the road and you got to get going, he's not good there. So maybe he's really good when the first couple plays, like, right? The whole game script when you're like, this is what you're going to prepare all week for. This is how it's going to look, Justin. This is what we're going to do. Nope. This is his second worst statistical rating in the first quarter. So maybe you think maybe he's good when they have a lead. You know, you have to just chalk it up a little bit, run a little bit more, pass it off to your checkdowns and whatnot. Nope. He has a bad rating there. He has 2 touchdowns and 7 interceptions when the team has the lead, which is pretty rare for the Bears. So he's just not checking any boxes anywhere of showing like significant growth. And I don't know. I thought Justin Fields was the second best quarterback in that draft class. And I don't know, man.
Somebody made the joke. They were like, listen, dynasty owners of Justin Fields, don't drop him yet. Just a reminder, Terrell Pryor did have a 1,000-yard receiving season once in his career.
So, I don't know.
So, I haven't fully given up on Fields because last year we saw, I think, for a decent stretch of time, enough to say he has a skill set that you can build an offense around. I just don't feel like they're really doing that right now, right? Like, how many times in the last couple of weeks have we seen him from the shotgun standing there for 10 seconds, right? And not do anything, right? And that, to me, is coaching because last year he wasn't doing that. When there was nothing, he would go get 5. He would go get 10. Sometimes it would be a lot more than that, right? I mean, he was on track to shatter Lamar's rushing yards record for a quarterback, but he just didn't play as many games as Lamar did, right? So I think that there's a skill set there that just needs the right sort of combination of GM that drafted him, head coach that drafted him, and somebody who works with quarterbacks, with an OC or quarterback coach, excuse me, that knows him and works with him, right? Right, like now, Porch. Everything's against him, right? Because and I talked to this about a little bit too, like the organization's just so mismanaged because they had a GM that a GM and a coach that drafted
Trubisky
instead of Mahomes that year, whatever. And then they fired that coach and brought in Matt Nagy to fix them. And then he was good for a year. And then he fell off. And then they got rid of Trubisky. And then Nagy and that regime drafted Fields. And then they got rid of Nagy and that regime. And then brought in a new one, right? And then fired, you know, like, it's a cycle of coaches and not the quarterback they wanted, getting a new one, then firing that coach, and then getting a new coach, and then getting rid of that quarterback, and then getting a new coach and GM, and then firing that quarterback. Like, it's just a vicious cycle, and I think that you need to, like, plant your flag on something for a couple of years before you could be like, let's just move on, right? I know that so often in this league nowadays, there are teams that go from worst to first and that become good very quickly. But that's not every team. And I think that we are spoiled with that. We're spoiled with the Jacksonville Jaguars of last year that turn around and win the division and win a playoff game, right? That's not the norm in the NFL. That happens for sure, but not every team does that. You need to, like, build from the ground up. Like, I mean, look at the example that I'm going to use is the Buffalo Bills because they're my team, but we hilariously accidentally made the playoffs in our first year of being a McDermott because we traded every player that offseason. And I was freaking out as a Bills fan in the offseason when we traded Sammy Watkins and then Ronald Darby. And then we traded I forget what his name was, but there was an Alabama linebacker that was a second round pick that I had loved. And we got rid of him. Like, we got rid of everybody on that team.
Oh, I do remember what you're talking about.
And then we ended up, it's like Reuben Foster, I think maybe, is that the player? But regardless,
he definitely was an Alabama linebacker.
We moved on from all these players and I was freaking out. And then, yeah, we accidentally made the playoffs because we had a good coach, right? We had some young talent on that team that was nice. And it was also a weak AFC that year. Nope, Colette, please do not eat that cord. But then the second year, we drafted our quarterback and we were bad that next year, right? And it took us a couple of years to get good. And then we went 10-6 and lost in the first round. And then the next year was the year that we made the AFC title game. So it takes 3 to 4 years sometimes to get there. And I know that, like, Bears fans are just looking for something, right? They're not looking for, you know, Super Bowl right now. They're just looking for something promising. And, you know, Fields isn't going to be benched, I don't think, this year. I think that they're going to just go the full year because if they're bad, they're going to probably have the first overall pick because they have theirs and they have Carolina's, right? So their percentage of getting the first overall pick is very high and they can just take Caleb Williams and that's fine. So there's no reason to not just ride Fields out the rest of the year. But you're right. It's definitely concerning and it's upsetting for a guy that we both loved.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely hear you. Like I said, I don't excuse the organization necessarily. I didn't think that Eberflus was the best coach to bring in when you had Fields there. I think it's concerning that, and I get, like I said, it was a very tumultuous week, right? But when you take over and you're a defensive-minded guy, and I get you're playing Kansas City, but when you give up a 40-burger there, like, as a defensive guy, you're like, oh, yeah, like, all these new pieces. Like, that's not exactly showing promise there either. But, yeah, I mean, it's just hard to say, right? I mean, you can look at guys that we're pretty familiar with in Josh Allen and Tua. They had their year one with a coach that, I mean, like, it worked, right? But then they went out and got in the weapon. They got Stephon Diggs, and Josh Allen improved, and they got Tyreek Hill for Tua, and Tua improved.
And, one and I get that
DJ Moore isn't necessarily those players, say, yeah. But they got Fields a weapon, and Fields isn't even using him right now.
They also even traded a second round, like, the 33rd overall pick for Claypool. So, like, they made moves to put pieces around him, and it's not working right now. So you're right.
The line is awful.
The line is very bad, and it's a problem, but that shouldn't be a problem for a guy who is good at running. He should just run, and he's not doing it.
The part of me, the thing is where if we're talking about coaching, and I'm sorry we're talking about this so long. If it is coaching, I believe because, and I talked about this during draft season, because we were talking about the whole thing, like, do you trade Fields instead of trading the number one overall pick and whatnot? Is Fields durability? Because, I mean, he played, but he did get banged up a lot last year, where if they saw that and they're like, okay, like, we do want you to still use your legs, but we can't put you in as much danger as we did last year. But I can't believe they're like, you know what? Stand back there and don't move.
Yeah, I don't understand it at all. And I hope that we eventually see, you know, the rubber hitting the road and the coaches be like, you know what, just be you, Justin. Because I actually do think that's a large portion of it. Because, again, I it doesn't make any sense for a guy that athletic and that instinctual to watch him week after week stand in the pocket for 6 seconds and not throw the ball and also not run it until it's far too late. It just doesn't make sense for you to not do that unless you, the people who are coaching you, are telling you to do it.
I don't know. It's interesting.
It's weird. So it'll be something to follow for sure. I am rueful about that. That was good. all right. I'm going to rant a little bit and I'm going to take my 1 minute to talk about Taylor Swift.
Let's go.
But I'm going to rant about this because this should be a positive thing. This should be so much fun. And for a lot of us, it really truly is. Because for those of you who listen and don't know, I'm a major Taylor Swift fan, right? And also a co-host an NFL podcast, so I'm a major NFL fan. So this should be super fun and positive. But for a lot of people, it's not, and it's driving me crazy. There are people online being so mean about this and about Taylor Swift and all this stuff, and it drives me nuts. There are arguments being had that have been arguments that have been being had about Taylor Swift for forever. So I'm going to handle two of those really quick and then tell you why we should just be like having fun with this. The first one is that people are like, oh, I can't stand Taylor Swift. All she does is write songs about breakups and relationships. Okay, so Taylor Swift's entire discography, 73% of her songs are about relationships. I'll give you that. But okay, let's go to one of the number one selling country artists right now, because I know we have some people who like country music. Listen, Morgan Wallen. He's one of the top country artists right now. 76% of his songs are about relationships. Don't hear anybody complaining about that. From 2017 to 2023, this is from Billboard Music, they calculated that around 64.6% of all songs in that period were about love or relationships. Newsflash, guys, everybody writes about love and relationships, okay? So I don't understand why you don't like Taylor Swift because of it. So that's one point. Doesn't make sense. So if you just want to say you hate love and relationship songs, then you're saying you hate over half the percentage of songs that have come out in the modern era, okay? Second point, why can't we just let someone be happy, right? People have been dissecting Taylor Swift's dating history for forever. Just because your dating history isn't laid out for the, and to bear for the whole world to see, doesn't mean that you're any different. You and I have both dated many people, and people who complain about Taylor Swift have dated many people, right? Some of them have gone bad. Some of them have gone bad because they're your fault. Some of them haven't because of not your fault, right? But just because nobody gets to see that, nobody gets to criticize you, so it's fair to lob grenades from the, you know, what's the, from the cheap seats. That's what I was looking for. Thank you, Adam's brain. It drives me nuts. And then when you start to get excited about it, and again, I don't hear what I'm not saying. It's okay if people don't particularly love Taylor Swift and would rather not talk about it. That's totally fine. But when you get like in arguments about it and you start saying you hate her and you start, and I heard somebody this week say F Taylor Swift, and it drove me up the wall because you have no legitimate reason to hate somebody that you don't know, that from all intents and purposes and everything we hear about them is truly a really nice person, right? You have no reason to, and that drives me nuts. So to end it off, this should be something that's fun for all of us, because in a 40-point blowout of the Chicago Bears, everybody was turning to that game just to see the interactions between Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, who was on the field. That should just be fun for us, right? It should just be fun, but there are people who want to suck fun out of the world. So, love Taylor Swift, love Travis Kelce, and we should just have fun with it. So, there you go.
All right.
Whew. Anyway, we can move on.
That was passionate.
Because I know you don't want to have a conversation.
Passionate pal.
Which is fine. You don't love Taylor Swift, but you don't hate her, and you don't think that people are dumb for liking her, and that's fine. You should be that way if you don't like Taylor Swift. Don't say F Taylor Swift, though. Anyway, let's move on. Let's get to some news and notes. Let's get some injury updates. Joe Burrow did play on Monday Night Football.
He did.
Did look like a statue for most of the game.
It was a weird game.
Near the end of the game, he started to use some mobility on some plays, and I think that we saw maybe some adrenaline in there, but I don't think he was his full self. I think there were times you can clearly see that, but he did play.
He did play. Yep. It was a weird game. Like you said, at times it felt very statuesque of, you know, it was even scary, I guess. I mean, not for us, but for Bengals fans. Like, just having to see him backpedal a couple times, you're like, oh, something's going wrong. But, you know, he did it, he played, and, you know, he told the reporters afterward that they got through it, and that's all they wanted to do.
Won a very tight game, close game, a game they needed. You can't really go to 0-3 and still compete. Certainly not with the AFC North. The other teams are looking pretty good. I think they're all 2-1. So that's tough. Other injuries, Saquon Barkley looks probably like he's going to be out for a couple weeks.
I think this was all really odd, where, like, it was told, like, it's, like, three different sprains at some point or another, and now it's just a sprain. So, like, I'm not a doctor, and I don't pretend to know, like, what any of that means, but, like, why were we told it was, like, a high ankle sprain at first, and then
I definitely think I think the fear initially was high ankle, and then it wasn't, and then really it boils down to I'm not a doctor, so I don't know if that's – does that happen sometimes when it's close enough that you can't tell? I don't know if that makes any sense, but I don't know. So we'll probably be without Saquon for a little while, which is unfortunate. You know, Breda looked good in a couple of spots.
He did all right.
So I know that Brian Dable will use him but it hurts the Giants going forward for sure. The other large one that happened this weekend was Derek Carr did go down in the Green Bay game. It is an AC joint, and he is week to week. Josh and I had a conversation at work about why can't they just say day to day if he's possible, just questionable to play this week. I think that's silly, but regardless, it might be a Jameis Winston revenge game this weekend. So you did make the point that you think that they win that game if Derek Carr doesn't get knocked out.
The Packers game?
And we will talk about it shortly here, so we don't talk about it too much, but you did make that point.
Yeah, I think if he doesn't go down, they don't. We'll talk about that more, but yeah.
Any other major injuries to hone in on?
Yeah, I mean, the Mike Williams.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that because Mike I was Williams, sad about it.
What was it, torn Achilles?
Yeah, it was an AC tear, I think.
Okay, yeah. Well.
But regardless.
For a guy
who that happens to all the time.
Mounting.
Again, it's super sad for him and for the sport, but to be selfish about it, I have him in a fantasy league, in a dynasty league, and I put him on the trade block moments before he got hurt because I was like, you know what? He's crushing it. He's having an awesome day. Let's trade him now before he gets injured because then I can cash in on that, right? Be smart fantasy owner, and then got injured almost immediately after that, which is, you know, kind of funny but also not funny because a player got injured, right? So we don't want to make fun of that. But we're making fun of Adam, not Mike Williams. So, yes, it is very sad for a player who has been much maligned his whole career, but when he's healthy and on the field, is a pretty awesome player.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Any other ones we want to cover?
I think those are the big ones that are ringing out to me.
All right, let's get into some week through.
Week through.
So, week two in review was so nice last week because it's just perfectly alliterative. But week three in review doesn't really work that much.
So I think it sounds great.
Anyway, let's get to Colts-Ravens. Colts 22, Ravens 19. Matt Gay went 5-for-5 on field goals on Sunday, including the 53-yard game winner in overtime. Four of those field goals came from 50-plus yards, which is the most in a single game in NFL history. So if you would have told me that a kicker made history in this game on Sunday, would not have thought Matt Gay over Justin Tucker.
I don't know. Oh my gosh, Evan McPherson was certainly trying last night.
Oh yeah, Evan McPherson also was pretty great. But yes, Matt Gay makes history. Little, the Colts win in a
little Minshew magic.
Minshew magic in an upset, more like referee magic, but you know, it's fine. I will say this, I am always the person who says you got to capitalize on your other opportunities, and I will always say that, but when you get down to like the second drive in overtime, you're right across midfield, and it's clearly a pass interference call that would have been a first down in field goal range to win it, then I'm going to get a little upset by it. Also,
sure, I get it.
When it's my survivor pick team, I'm going to get even more upset. But that's a tough one to drop for the Ravens, for sure.
It is. Well, probably the most important thing we haven't said about this game is that Dan Orlovsky continues to get that monkey off his back, where last year it was Jimmy Garoppolo. Gardner did it this year, so I feel like, you know, he can finally wash that away.
I mean, he'll never be able to wash it away. Stephen A. Smith will bring it up every time he's on First Take.
I mean, it's actually he'll never wash it away because of the fact that he runs so far before. Yeah. But Anyways.
But it was. It did happen in the game, and it didn't end up mattering because the Colts pulled it off in the end.
They pulled it off.
This strange football game.
So we'll have to see. This is week four for the pup, right? So there's one more week where Jonathan Taylor will not be playing, but after that he is eligible to be back. Whether or not he will, we will have to see. So is this bigger for the Colts or is this bigger for the Ravens right now?
If you want my honest answer, it's neither. I don't think it's big for either of them because truly I think that the Colts are still a solid football team that are going to fight in every game. And I believe that heading into the year. And they showed us some of that. And I think that the Ravens is a game that they should have won and probably, you know, in a very different small universe did win, right? So I don't think that they're like all of a sudden we should be super concerned about the Ravens. I think still think they're very good. I know that their running back room keeps getting decimated, but that happens every year to the Ravens and they always find a guy that produces for them. So I'm not concerned about that. Zay Flowers continues to be a go-to guy for Lamar Jackson and looks good. So not worried about that. I really just think that I don't feel worse or better about either team. I think and feel exactly the same about both teams.
Yeah, I don't think I feel worse, but I think this is a big deal for the Ravens. I think this is a big deal because as much as I like the Ravens, and I do, remember I picked them to go to the Super Bowl last year, we've seen this the last handful of years out of the Ravens where this is a game and we were talking to one of our Steelers correspondents, Ian, and he was like, the Colts always play the Ravens tough. Okay, whatever. But this is really a game that the Ravens should have won, right? Like, this isn't something that you should have been like, oh, like, we're going to the second drive in overtime. Like, their starter is out that has been playing really, really well. I get that we like Minshew Magic, and that's so fun, and we talk about him breaking his hand for eligibility and all that jazz, and we love him. But regardless, like, this is something the Ravens should have, I think, had, where, you know what, they didn't need to give up over 120 yards to Zach Moss and 4 yards carry and all those things. And when they needed to make that stop, I think a veteran-led team, and I get that, they're less veteran than they have typically been, but they still have great backers. We like when, you know, when it's overtime and you need to stop, then don't allow an 8-yard run. Like, you know they haven't been throwing the ball particularly well all day. You know what their bread and butter has been. This is something we've seen from the Ravens, and it's a little concerning to me.
Yeah, and there's this conversation happening about them playing down to their teams that they play, which has happened over the last couple of years. And I don't think that any of those things are not concerns for me, but I just don't think any of them are going to hinder them from doing what I expect them to do this year, which is win the division, and I pick them to do so. I think that, you know, every team in the NFL loses games like this. It's very rare that the best teams don't even drop games like this sometimes. So while they are concerns, I think that they're concerns that can be corrected, and going forward they can be better for it. And, you know, they may have lost this game, and that sucks, but they already have one game up on another team in the division, the Browns, who they beat the previous week, right? So they already have a leg up in the division. Obviously, there's some issues happening in the backfield.
Well, that was the Steelers.
Did they beat? I thought they beat the Browns.
And they played Browns and Pittsburgh played week 2.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Irregardless.
Yeah.
Irregardless isn't a word. I corrected myself. It's not a word.
I agree with everything you're saying. Yeah. Depending on which way they pivot. You're right. All great teams lose games. They all drop games that you're like, oh, why did that happen? It just depends if they use it as a bouncing off point or a dejected point.
That's a good point. That's a good point. It'll be there. I forget who they play this week. That's not bad.
They play the Browns.
So it's this week. I was just making up the week. So again, huge test for them this week. So we'll have to see because the Browns are certainly an incredibly good defense. So let's get to that Packers Saints game that we sort of teased earlier and rant rave recall a little bit, and then the injury update. The Packers prevail 18-17. They were down 17-0 and mount a huge second half comeback to win.
Yeah, they did. I think it was extremely promising for the Packers, especially coming off of the game that they did in week 2 against Atlanta, where they had the 12-point lead and couldn't capitalize or make things happen when they needed to. So to see the resilience in a young team that continues to be beat up on with injuries and having supposed, and I don't mean that in any kind of negative way, but supposed leadership go down to not be there for new young leaders to establish themselves, to be like, you know what, like, we're fine, let's keep battling. I think that that's only really good for the organization.
Honestly, and we semi-talked about this, and this isn't going to be the first time we talk about analytics on this episode because it happened in another game, so we'll talk about it. But what I really, really want to highlight is the fact that analytics worked in this game, and that's why they won it for a lot. Well, not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons they won. And we point out all the time when it goes wrong, right? And everybody, like Rex Ryan, I coached 40 years in this league, and I'm trying to get the lisp in there because he has a little bit of one. And you want to tell me statistics and analytics? I know football. Well, that's, you're not coaching anymore, and there's a reason for it. But the guys like that want to freak out about analytics, but when it works, everybody seems to be silent. But Matt LaFleur made the decision to go for two on the first touchdown, knowing that the percentage chance of going for two twice is that you're going to get at least one of them. And the best outcome is that you get the first one, and then you can win on your second touchdown. And the other outcome is that you don't get it, and then you get the second one. But then that's the outcome you were already going to have if you just kicked the two extra points, right?
Sure.
So I love the aggression. I love the fact that, and again, it's weird that I believe in analytics and also momentum, because that those kind of don't mix a little bit. But I also believe that that plays into it, is that you're mad at this comeback. You get the two, and it's like, oh, here we go. We're going to win this thing. We believe. And so I applaud Matt LaFleur for that decision, for making the adjustments at halftime, right? I think a lot of times early on in Matt LaFleur's tenure as coach, we talked about how good he was on script early and that adjustments sometimes were an issue. Not an issue in this game. They made adjustments for sure. I mean, we could talk all we want about Derek Carr's injury, but the offense made adjustments, right? Like, maybe they don't win the game if Derek Carr's in there and Derek Carr plays better offensively for the Saints than Winston and what that offense was when he came in. But that doesn't change the adjustments that were made on the offensive side of the ball when a lot of players were out. Aaron Jones, Christian Watson, their offensive lineman missing, like Bakhtiari. Like, there were people missing, and they made adjustments, no excuses, and they won the game. And that's, I think, the best. Good teams win bad. Great teams figure out a way to win games ugly like this was for most of the game until they turn it on hot in the third and fourth quarter.
Sure, sure. Yeah, but the other flip side of this is I want to talk about my boy Derek Carr and what I think that meant. And, you know, it's actually funny because I feel like now you're a little more excited to watch the Saints with Jameis because, like, you're a Jameis supporter now, although, like, I remember years ago and you just didn't.
I was like, get out of the league. See, this is what happens when people get dunked on. I'm the first to defend them because I don't think it's fair when everybody doesn't like somebody. But
if you're
everybody
the one,
likes
if you're
some,
the one dunking, you're like, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I'm right. MJ in Space Jam right now.
My arm can't extend that far. No, but, like, everybody is trying to tell me that Derek Carr is great, and I just don't think he is. That's why I'm against Derek Carr.
I don't think he's great. But I will say, talking about that offense, so after Derek Carr went down, until the final drive where the Saints tried to get into field goal position to lead the game or win the game, right? So there were four drives by Jameis Winston. They totaled 49 yards. And it took about 7.5 minutes. 7.5 minutes and a half they were able to hold the ball after Derek Carr went down. The thing about the Saints, and I'm not saying that Derek Carr, and I never said that he was the greatest quarterback. I said I think this team will win the division. I didn't say they're going to win the Super Bowl. I don't get where I'm getting this hate. The offensive
line. Are you getting hate for this?
From you.
I don't hate you. I just dislike your take. It's okay.
The offensive line is bad. It's rough. It's in rough shape, and it's allowing a lot of quarterback hits, a lot of sacks, and it's not opening lanes for the running backs. Alvin Kamara comes back this week. We'll see what that means and what that does. But Derek Carr is clearly, in my opinion, and I think Jameis will do fine for whatever he needs to fill in. I think Jameis is probably, in my opinion, the best backup quarterback. I guess you can make a debate that Andy Dalton could be the best. I don't know. He technically started over Jameis, so I don't know. But I think he's going to be fine. I think he's very, very capable of leading an offense. But I just think they are a complete team because of their defense right now.
Their defense is great, and I could never argue against it because they truly are. But yeah, I mean, I think he'll be fine. I will say Cooper Rush might be the best backup in the NFL right now. I know Dallas fans will say that, but we could talk about that another time. But yeah, it was a great game. It was a lot of fun rooting for the comeback. I know it was partially Palace picks, but also it's always fun when you see a team, certainly one that your friend likes, make a comeback and win. That's a huge win for them and huge game coming up on Thursday, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So
yeah,
it'll be fun. Let's get to that other game that had a little bit of analytic debate going on in it, but also was just a really exciting game. Chargers 28, Vikings 24. Josh lost a heartbreaking bet on this game.
Lost lots of heartbreaking
bets
this
Jefferson,
week.
Seven catches, 149. Josh had a bet that would have paid out, what, like $100, $80?
Yeah, that was actually my lowest bet. But.
And it would have paid out pretty nice payday, but he needed 150 or more, and it was 149. And then he cramped up and had to be taken off the field. And then he came back on the field. We're like, just one catch, 1 yard, and just couldn't quite do it.
Yeah.
But yes, you know what? I feel like I should start real quick with this.
Okay.
Because I need to issue Justin Herbert an apology. Okay?
Wow.
Let me first say this before I twist. I'm going to twist the knife a little bit first, and then I'll pull it out. Okay? So, I still want to see you lead a team to the playoffs and go on a little bit of a run. Win a playoff game, right? I still want to see that. I still think we need to see that, right? Taking that out of consideration, you played one of the most perfect games a quarterback has ever played. And I know that, like, you didn't throw for as many yards as, like, you didn't hit, like, a career total in yards. But 40 of 47 is insanely good, especially for a quarterback going downfield as often as Herbert does. He did not check the ball down every play in this game. He was going down the field and he was hitting guys like Keenan Allen, who ended up with 19 catches for over 200 yards, and Mike Williams, who got hurt, he was like 7 catches for 117 or something like that. Like, he was spreading the ball around, getting guys involved. Donald Parham had 2 touchdowns again in this game. He was sensational. And again, I really don't think you ever see the Shaq meme where it was like, I apologize, I wasn't familiar with your game.
No.
You're not seeing that? So there was an interview. I think it might have been Christian Wood, which is funny because Christian Wood is a controversial basketball player because he puts up stats but hasn't really been on winning teams. But regardless, in an interview, Shaq was like, I need to apologize for criticizing you. I wasn't familiar with your game after he had a big game. So I don't think I was familiar enough with your game, Justin Herbert, and I apologize. I was a little bit too hard. I never called you bad. I never said you weren't great. I just question whether you were elite because of other factors that aren't data driven, right? And that's fine. But you are, it feels so weird for me to say this because people are going to be like, yo, of course, Adam. But Justin Herbert is a great quarterback. Obviously, he listened to the show because he was like, wow, Adam's doubting me. I need to show him that I'm actually one of the best in the league. And he was awesome. There were so many plays that I know he makes often. I hope that we see this through the rest of the year, and I hope we see it in a playoff game that matters to win a playoff game.
Okay.
So
nice. That was fun for me. I appreciate that. Yeah, this was one of my most excited looking forward to games of week 3. So obviously good when it's 28-24 and, you know, there's a chance at the very end for the losing team to take that lead. I think that's really exciting. I was really surprised.
Those are the best games when you get down to it. Like, not even it takes you a little bit step further. It wasn't even just they got the ball back with a chance and then interception or a couple of plays and then they don't get it. They got down into scoring territory, right? It was right there.
Well, they started in scoring territory. So I was really surprised. And you know what? Sometimes in life, what you need is a rival. Ash needs Gary. You know what? Who's another rival?
I was ready for you to name Buzz for, like, Goku needs Vegeta.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah. Anybody, like, what are some not nerdy cartoons that people will know?
Jim needs Dwight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. So you know what? The Vikings went out and
the one guy from Seinfeld needs Newman.
The one guy.
I don't know his name. I don't watch Seinfeld. I'm so sorry.
Vikings go out last week and they make a trade for Cam Akers. Obviously not high risk. They're just swapping 6 round picks. Alexander Madison.
But I'll wait until you finish.
What?
I have another rivalry, but I'll wait until you finish.
Okay. Madison, who has not looked great the first 2 weeks as the new lead back, having the keys to the car handed to him.
Showed some flash.
He did. He averaged almost 5 yards a carry. Still had a couple of drops that I think were alarming in the passing game. I was personally really excited about Cam Akers coming over because I feel like he fits their offense a lot better than what the Rams have been moving towards. So I was like, oh, yeah, like that's good. And he'll still get on the field sometimes. But I feel like Madison was like, you know what? I finally got this opportunity. I'm not giving it up. Here we go. And I feel like he showed up a little bit to my dismay because I was really excited for just everyone to be flinging it all over the place. And I mean, Kirk still had 367 yards, so it's not like they weren't. But I was like, you have to hand the ball to 20 times. You haven't done this all year. Why are you doing it now of all times? But regardless.
Yeah. The other rivalry is Taylor Swift versus insecure, emotionally unintelligent men. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was funny. We were talking about it. Like, there were a couple of plays where I was like, all right, Madison. I mean, he had the one drop, right? And you know, there were some other things, but trading for Cam Akers, and he was like, hey, I need to play better, you know? Yeah, looks good.
So, you know, we talked about this game to wrap this up about being a pivot game for whatever team that lost. Yeah. What do you think happens with the state of the Vikings now? Because you said Cincinnati can't go 0-3 and then really...
I want to say that the Vikings are done, but I think the bottom of the NFC is much more weak than the AFC.
Sure.
So I think that they have a better chance to sneak into that last seed. But I think we're burying the lead here. People want to have us to have a fight over analytics in the fourth down call on the Chargers 24.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that.
People want us to fight about that.
Well, so. I thought it was an awful call.
Okay. So here's – I brought data. We know our boss loves data, so I'm going to be a more data-driven person. So the issue with the fourth down for me is not the decision to whether or not to go for it, because the stats on this are this. The win percentage for the Chargers, if they go for it, is 88.9% win percentage. The win percentage to punt was 82.1%, right? The problem is not with that, right? The problem is that he had a similar decision last week in plus territory and punted it. The problem is the inconsistency, right? If you're going to be this guy who follows the data, do it. Because when you do, then the argument can't be, oh, look at this, he's making a mistake. Because the data overwhelmingly tells you to go for it, which means if the numbers are correct, which they are based off of history, right? It's not like we just made up the numbers. Then more often than not, it's going to work for you. And then people can say, hey, more often than not, it works for him. Let him do what he wants to do. But because you waffle and you go for it this time and it doesn't work and you didn't go for it last time, if it worked that time, then I can sit here and say, look, well, it worked last time. It works most of the time, right? But because you doubt yourself, people who don't believe in numbers are going to say, oh, look at that. It didn't work. It was a bad decision, but that's not how it works.
I just don't agree with, and we've said this so many times over the last handful of weeks, he's a defensive-minded coach. I don't agree with leaving your defense out to dry with 19 yards. I get they need to score a touchdown, not a field goal, so it's a little bit different. But I would rather be like, hey, guys, you need to go defend 80 yards versus, guys, this could be a screen.
But see, I understand you saying that, but I feel like that argument is so easily flipped the other way to say, I think it shows tremendous confidence in your defense that says, guys, look, if we don't get this, I know you're going to stop them. I believe that you could stop them on the 1 yard line if you had to. So I'm going to go for this here because if we get it, 100% chance we win this game. If we don't, you can stop them. I believe you.
I like that positive spin. It is a positive spin. I feel like that's not what the guys that have been out there running around all day are like, man.
Sure.
Like, don't make us do this.
And just to be fair, I did use numbers, so I will say their win percentage did drop to 59% when they didn't get it right. So instead of 82% punting it, it dropped to about 60 by not punting it, not getting it. But again, it would have been 99.99 win percentage had they got it. So I Obviously, they ended up winning, right? So it won't be as big of a deal as, you know, it would be other times. But I think it was the right call. But regardless, let's talk really quick about those Miami Dolphins. Wow. 70-20. Let me shoot through some of my tidbits that I have for this really quick so we don't take up the end of the episode too much. But Tua Tagovailoa, 1-3 weeks this year, 3-0, 72-101, 8 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. Oh, wait, sorry. That was last year's numbers. This year's numbers are 3-0, 72-101, 8 touchdowns to 2 interceptions.
It's pretty spooky, isn't
it? Just as good as he was last year. And I think people are more excited for it this year because of that judo, because he's going to survive. According to Next Gen Stats, the top 6 fastest ball carriers in a game for the season so far are as follows. Number 6, Devon Achane this week. Number 5, Tyreek Hill, week 1. Number 4, Raheem Mostert, last week. Number 3, Tyreek Hill, week 1. Number 2, Devon Achane, this past week. And number 1, Tyreek Hill, this past week. They have the all top 6 of the fastest runs in a football game this year. They're unbelievably quick. They're unbelievably well-coached. And they're just fun to watch. They're fun to watch, and they're scary to play against, as I will experience this Sunday.
Yeah, more than anything, and I think it is really, really odd that his number is the exact same. It's pretty weird. But more than anything, right now what's not happening is he's not being hit. He's taken 1 sack in 3 games. I think that's the key right there.
Getting the ball out quick, being accurate with it, and better protection. And then knowing when to throw it away or get down when you
need. There's also just a more general commitment to the run.
Yeah, for sure. And it's working. So we don't have to spend a lot of time on that because they're awesome and they'll be in Pal's picks. So do you want to talk really quick about the Dallas upset before we move on?
Oh, man. I hadn't even thought about that. I'll just say.
Just briefly. We don't have to talk too much about it.
I'll just say.
Listen, if you want to hear about the Dallas upset, go to Get Up. They talk about Dallas every single episode. I promise.
More so than anything, I'm going to tip my cap to the Arizona Cardinals. It happens every year. We all write a team off and say they're going to be awful and trash and garbage, and Lockerman is the number 1 overall pick, and they come out. And I know that this is their first win of the season, so it's not like they're doing the Seahawks thing where they're like, oh, man, like they're 2-1 or they're 3-0. But they have been feisty, and if they said, like, you're locking in the number 1 overall pick, the players have not received that message. And even if we all sit here and laugh and about Jonathan Gannon and his firing your gut and riding the bus and all of that jazz, something's working in that
organization. We love quirky. If they win, I will start to love Jonathan Gannon really fast. It's already starting to happen because I think he's hilariously odd. And if they're good and playing hard for him, that's even better. So the one quick thing I wanted to point out about this is, one, you shouldn't use this as an opportunity if you're a football fan to question Dak. Dak was fine in this game. He wasn't excellent by any stretch of the imagination. And the interception's bad, but it's on a down where you need to take a chance at the end zone. And in fact, if the ball goes a little bit higher, it's in the perfect spot for his player to catch the touchdown, right? So I don't think we should be questioning Dak in this. Injuries certainly played a part in this. The concern I have is the way the coach handled it. Because after the game, Mike McCarthy said, you know, we need to be better. We missed the mark and all this stuff. But then he said, we had 3 guys starting who didn't take a lot of reps the past week. That was offensive line. You can't operate that, he said. Operate like that, right? So using the injury excuse, which, by the way, is a valid excuse. But what I love is that Texans head coach, DeMeco Ryans, said this quote, when his team had 4 out of the 5 projected offensive line starters out this past week. He said, it really doesn't matter who's out there, who's called. It's opportunity when we're missing guys. We're relying on everybody who steps out on that field just to do their job and do it with a relentless mindset. So again, you know, injuries were a problem in both of those games, but one coach used it as an excuse in the post game, and one coach used it as an opportunity to say, we have a mindset that's relentless, and whoever steps up, and they absolutely dominated the Jacksonville Jaguars. It wasn't fluky at all. They were the better football team in that game, and I think part of it was because their head coach would not let them be. And again, I've talked about Mike McCarthy might be the downfall for Dallas at some point. And you know what? It's not because he doesn't, you know, he's obviously a very good winning head coach, right? But, and this could be a blip along the road. I still have them as my Super Bowl pick. Notice how I didn't start the episode with a recall. I still have them in there, right? But that is more of a concern for me than a lot of the other stuff that people are talking about in the media. I don't we don't need to hear the head coach being making excuses.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I
like
the head coach to beat the leader.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
All right, let's get unless there's anything else you want to talk about.
I'm okay.
All right. Now it's time for
Pals Picks.
Oh yeah. That was good. That was good this week. Give me the rundown.
Yeah, you know what? You're crushing it. And I'm not. I'm not crushing. I sold my soul for last year. I did the whole Rams thing. I won the Super Bowl, and now I'm rebuilding, and I'm fine. No, I mean, I am doing poorly.
Things change fast, and
you know, we still got a long way to go.
Plenty of time.
So you know, the harder they are up, the harder they'll fall. So here we go. Let's start this week. So you got to give me the games first this week. And I did. You gave me a doozy of a slate.
Yep, I went. It's the strategy I always go with. And I will say, some of the games you gave me, I thought about briefly, but I just felt more confident about them than the ones I gave you. Let's go to our first London game of the year.
That's not the game you gave me. That's the game I gave you.
I read that wrong, and now I feel really bad about it. So see, the problem is I have to bring up my email because I sent them to you in my email, and I wrote my games on the rundown. I didn't write your games in the rundown. So let's go to the Thursday night football game. The Green Bay Packers are hosting the Detroit Lions, 2-1 versus 2-1 for the division. Here we go.
Yeah, it really is an important battle right now in the NFC North, with the Vikings and the Bears being winless, and they had the Packers and the Lions sitting there 2-1. So this is for the takings for right now in week 4, right? I'm really excited about this game, but right now the difficult thing about it is the injuries, right? So we obviously don't know, but it's a quick turnaround. But the Packers injury list is not looking good. And so we've been talking about that all season. We've been like, yeah, like they're still winning, and that's great, and they're learning how to overcome these things. I don't know if it happens on Thursday night against a division rival that is coming off, in my opinion, their most complete game. Maybe not the flashiest, not the most high scoring. It wasn't, but I think it was their most complete game.
I think I agree with that. Yeah,
so sure. when David Bakhtiari and David Devondre Campbell and Rashawn Gary, which I think is probably, he was limited, actually, Elton Jenkins, when they're not practicing and you have some guys that are limited like Christian Watson and Zach Tom, you're starting right tackle, it's just mounting a little bit, and I don't know if I see him getting it done on Thursday night on a short week coming off the emotions of overcoming that. I'm going to take the Lions in this one.
I will say the Packers losing this game isn't as bad as the Lions, because the Packers have that. Again, their head coach won't make the excuse, hopefully. I would look silly if head coaches started doing this, right? It's fine. the Packers do have the excuse of the injury, right? Regardless of whether you call out or not, the Dallas Cowboys do have the excuse of they lost their best cornerback and then they were missing most of their line. Like, that's a legitimate excuse to lose a game against a team like the Cardinals. It's a legitimate excuse to lose a defensive or lose a divisional battle like this for the Packers if you're missing all those players. So if they lose, you could chalk it up to that, and then they'll be like, well, we'll be at full strength later. But if they win like this, wounded against the Lions who are fine, then they could be like, we beat you with like our hand tied behind our back. We're going to be fine. So I do think it'll be more devastating.
Yeah, more so than, yeah. That's a great point. I just want to see fight.
Oh, for sure. Like, I think we will. I'm excited.
I mean, I think the Packers have shown that so far, so yeah. I'd be surprised if they didn't. So
then we go to our teams, our big battle that was crazy last year.
Oh, man.
Buffalo hosting Miami. It's flipped finally for the first time in like ages. It won't be a cold game at the end of the year and a way too hot game at the beginning of the year. They are in Buffalo. So the two times Josh Allen has lost to Miami in his entire career was in his rookie year when he short-armed it to Charles Clay in the end zone on fourth down at the end of the game. And then last year where he short-armed it to Isaiah McKenzie in the front right corner of the end zone to lose. Other than that, Josh Allen has dominated against Miami also, especially when he's in Buffalo. But Miami, probably the hottest team in the NFL right now, so this should be the ultimate clash of the Titans.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. This really is a great matchup. I think he continues to dominate in Buffalo. In my philosophy, in terms of teams like this where I think both are very, very capable, I go with home splits in division games that I think both are very, very good. I think obviously coming off 70 points, you almost set history. You did set some history. I mean, they're not going to slouch. I don't think they're like looking over or anything, but I think, you know, you're going to come down off of that. You have to see how you respond on not scoring on your first 17 drives or whatever. And I think the Bills get this one at home.
I probably lean that way too, because also I think people are conveniently forgetting that we won 37-3. So it was also a crazy blowout. It's just that we didn't put up 70 points, you know? So I do think it'll be a good game. You hope it is, right? Because we always talk about sometimes these games don't live up to the hype, because this will be the most hyped game of the week. So I'm very excited. And then we finish those Saints, maybe a revenge game for Jameis Winston, hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I'm going with the Jameis revenge game.
Woo, let's go. We're eating W's.
Going with the home Warriors this week. The Saints and the Bucks, the last handful of years, have been such fierce games. They've been such fun games to watch. I'm not saying the Bucks are fake at all. I mean, they've been a wonderful story the first 2 weeks. And then I feel, but they met a different level of competition last night in the Eagles. And I don't think the Saints are the Eagles, but they're not the Bears. They're not the Vikings turning the ball over six times. It took the Bucks, well, I'm not 100% positive about this, so I'll say either late into the third quarter or early in the fourth. I can't remember which one because I was flipping back and forth between the games, so I missed the moment when it did, to gain 100 total yards of offense. Philly's a different beast in defense. But I think the Saints defense, even though they gave up 17 or 18 in the fourth quarter to lose to the Pack, I think they're a special defense that's going to rattle the Bucks. And I don't see Baker being super clean.
I think that's a fair assessment. The Eagles are certainly one of the best defenses. I also agree. I do not think the Saints are that far off. So I think that's a fair assessment. I do think it'll be close. So, all right.
But I'm excited. It's been a heated battle the last handful of years.
So you picked against your team twice. You had the Lions winning on the road. You had the Bills winning at home. And then you do have the Saints and a possible Jameis Winston. I'd be surprised if it's not Jameis Winston revenge game.
I also would be surprised if it's Derek Carr.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to flip it over to you. You went 2-1 last week. So you're sitting at a nice 6-3. That's real solid, my man.
Yeah.
And here we go. Deja vu a little bit. We're going to the first London game of the year.
Now we're going to London.
Yeah, football. So our fantasy friends over there, I don't know if anybody's getting to go to the game, but it'd be pretty cool if you were.
Yeah.
So getting to have...
Should I do my whole thing in a British dialect?
If you want to. You know, might offend somebody. I don't know. I mean, I talked about crumpets last week, so you know what?
Crumpets.
The Falcons taking on the Jags. Two teams coming off losses that have started the season. I mean, fairly strong.
So I two quick stats about this game. I'm very excited for this game. I love London games. For people who haven't heard me say this before, I love waking up to just you roll out of bed and there's football. I love it. So Bijan Robinson this season, 24% of his rush attempts have gone for 10 plus rushing yards. He's been awesome to start the season. I genuinely am very excited for this game. I think that there is rushing yards to be had against Jacksonville. I'm going to pick the Falcons in this one. I'm concerned about the Jacksonville Jaguars going forward. I think that they have a rough stretch of it if they don't win this game, because then they stay in London and they play Buffalo the following week. So their schedule does not get any easier.
The last time the Jags played Buffalo,
I remember the Jags are like, somebody asked on the Bill Simmons pod, was like, what's your team's weird nemesis team? And I think Jacksonville is probably Buffalo's, because they beat us in London once in that really crazy game where EJ Manuel started and Blake Bortles beat us. They beat us in that playoff game that was like 9-3. They beat us 2 years ago in that game that was 9-6 or something. So like, they're a weird nemesis team for us, and I hate playing them, but
that's fun.
I think that the run game continues to get going. I forgot about that
EJ Manuel.
Yeah,
we were together. You said you were going to like go into the priesthood or something if Buffalo lost.
Yeah, it was, and here I am, not celibate. So I picked the Falcons in this one.
Okay, I like that. You know what? I will say I'm really excited as an IDP fantasy player. Foy Lucan, I think, is going to eat because of how often those Falcons run.
Oh, yeah, so he'll get so many tackles. If you play IDP in fantasy, have him
fire him up.
Yes.
All right, division rival game here. This is a big one. The Ravens heading into Cleveland.
Yeah, two great teams, I think. I believe, like, I still have questions about Deshaun Watson. He looked much better last week, for sure.
Yeah.
I still don't think Deshaun's that great. I think that against a better defense, that's a bad take. The Titans are a great defense, so the fact that he did that against them is impressive. I don't want to not say that. I also think the Ravens have a good defense as well, and I think that their offense is eons better than the Titans' offense is right now, right? I think this is a hard-nosed game. I'm going to say this, and it's going to be like 40-something to 40-something. Don't be shocked if this is 16-13 or 13-10 or 19-16, something like that. I think it'll be a close, hard-nosed, hard-fought game, but I believe in Harbaugh and Lamar coming off the tough loss against the Colts to get right and get going and win this game.
All right, all right. And then we're going to Monday Night Football. I'll give you a good slate here. Start early and then end late. The Seahawks taking on the Giants.
Yeah, so this is a really, really hard one for me because I like that the Seahawks have sort of righted the ship. They're now 2-1 right after that week one loss to the Rams, which was tough. And then the Giants have had a weird go of it because they lose to one of the best defensive performances we've ever seen to the Dallas Cowboys in week one, right? Got out of hand immediately, full strength, got crushed. They win a crazy comeback game against the Cardinals, who we now are seeing are probably a decent team, right? Because they're fighting tough with everybody that they play, right? And who beat those aforementioned Dallas Cowboys. And then they run into another buzzsaw in the San Francisco 49ers and a career day from their starting quarterback, right? I genuinely think, and again, I'm going to go out on this limb, I'm going to see stupid for it. I think the Giants are better than they have shown. I'm picking the Giants at home in this one.
Okay.
I know that they are without Saquon Barkley most likely again, but I hinted at it earlier. I believe in Dable's ability to scheme up and Mike Kafka to scheme up Matt Breida and Gary Brightwell to be fine in the running game and then to get this passing game going a little bit more. I genuinely think that they are better than we have seen, and I think that they ran into the insanely good defense week one and just got out of hand. That's fine. We showed incredible promise and spunk and feistiness and tough, hard-nosed football in the second half against the Cardinals in the win, and then they again ran into another buzzsaw, which was close for most of the early parts of the game, and they pulled away in the third and fourth quarter in San Francisco and just couldn't win against the other best team in the NFC, right? I really think it was more of that than it is Giants. I think Giants win a close one.
Okay, I like it. I like it a lot. So you took the Falcons in London against the home Jags. The Ravens on the road over the Browns. That should be a fun one. And then the Giants on Monday Night Football over those Seahawks.
Heck yeah.
Like it, my friend.
That was Pal's Pick sponsored by Evermore, Taylor's version, which is sitting right by my... I really forgot what that was.
That is a window, Adam.
Well, actually, I was talking about what you put the record on, which means it's a record player, but I completely forgot the word. I was just thinking about how beautiful the album cover is. It's really nice. Anyway, let's get to some cold reads. I have one for you. No Rossi's rankings this week.
No Rossi's ranking this week.
Although I can do a quick Rossi's rankings of Taylor Swift albums if you want.
No, that's fine.
My cold read is... Sitting here now, I think if I were making the decision, I know who I would fire.
Ooh.
Who's the first coach fired right now?
It's actually really funny. This was going to be my cold read as well. For me, it's clear. I've been saying it since last year. I think Josh McDaniels is a bad head coach.
Okay. So is it just that simple? Or, I mean, is it like...
I think he's a bad head coach. I think he... does a poor job of motivating players to play their full potential. I don't know. I've never been in a locker room with him, right? So I'm just saying that. But it just doesn't feel like you're like, yeah, like we're going. Like, you know, Davante Adams has come out and be like, this isn't what I wanted. Like this is like when players are coming out and saying things like that, you're not like, I'm really like for this coach. So it just sits not great with me. I'm not going to lie. I agreed with the initial field goal call the first time when it was like 3 minutes and 30 seconds left or something like that. I agreed with that one. After they get the penalty, then you have to go for it. You wasted about a minute, which I think were really important, a really important minute. So I think that was all botch. We didn't even talk about that. But here, how about this? I'll say this. I know you're not a huge supporter of either of these quarterbacks. You don't really like Derek Carr. You don't really like Jimmy Garoppolo. But I feel like they've shown in their careers they're really, really solid, right? They're not Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. Jimmy almost, I guess, technically. Guess he has won a quarterback or won a Super Bowl technically. But they're not, you know, the Patrick Mahomes, but they're also not the, you're putting them at 32 in the league or whatever. The first 3 weeks of last year, Derek Carr threw 850 yards, 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Okay, that's middle of the line. This year, you brought in, you ousted that guy, you went and got your guy. Jimmy Garoppolo through 3 games has 709 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. That's worse. Yes, that's worse. Still not great. What's the one constant? Because it's not the quarterbacks. It's the coach.
It's a great argument. That's a mic drop right there.
I think it's Josh McDaniels.
I still don't like either quarterback. Mine right now, you know, that's a fine argument. And if it's him, I'll be like, yeah, I get it. I do think he's still a great offensive coordinator. So I think he should get somewhere as an offensive coordinator.
No problem with that.
And not be the leader. And I know you don't have a problem with that. I think Eberflus has got to go.
Okay.
I know that I'm the one who's kind of spearheading that it's coaching more than play. I think he's got to go. I think they got to get somebody interim who's offensive minded and just let Fields play, right? And just let him do what he wants to do, build it around him, and let's truly see. Because, again, if it's not, you're going to be taking a quarterback anyway. So why not get rid of the coach now and then get ahead of the, because if what you do is get rid of Fields and draft a new quarterback, you're doing what you've done the last 3 to 4 quarterbacks, which is move on from the quarterback and not the coach, and then get a new quarterback, and then you move on from the coach, and then you get it's a vicious cycle. Move on from the coach now, see what happens for Fields the rest of the year, and then either get a coach who's going to believe in Fields or get a coach who comes in with Caleb Williams next year and that they're tied together the whole time.
I hear you. I don't disagree with that. I will say the reason, and I won't be shocked whatsoever if they go and poop the bed against Denver and then he's out, right? Like, that's very possible. The reason I don't see that happening right now is because, and like I said, I don't know if I agreed with the hiring. He was a defensive-minded guy that inherited Fields when I was like, go get an offensive-minded guy. But they spent how much money on defense this year? Like $100 million in total dollars, where even though they look bad, and they have looked bad, they have no takeaways. I feel like they have like 1 sack or something crazy like that. It's been bad. But you say, like, I just started putting in my pieces for this defense that I could see us happening. We invested so much more money than what Justin Fields is, and I get that Justin Fields is a first-round pick and all that jazz, but let him bring what he does to make the team better and correcting that defense and be like, you know what, like, now we're going to go get my guy. We've already spent all this money to fix my defense. I can see the organization being like, oh, yeah, we just spent a lot to do that.
Yeah, I can see it too. I think that when you – is he 3-17, right? I just
– has he been there that long? Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, like, that's 2 years. But yes, good, so that's not – yeah, regardless. I hear you. He has not done a good job thus far.
Anyway, what everybody really wanted to know is it's Evermore is number one. Number two is Red Taylor's Vision. Number three is Midnight's. Number four, I want to say, is – Lover, and then number five, I think, is probably Speak Now.
See, I already know that my Swiftie fiance thinks Lover's one.
She does love Lover, and that's because she has you. Lover is the album for people who are as in love as she is. I don't have anybody for that right now.
Yeah, that's because I've been a negative force in your life.
Anyway, let's get to Fantasy Corner!
didn't even need to ask you my cold read. It's fine.
Wasn't it first coach fired?
Actually, one of them was that. Yeah. So let's head over. Guys,
we're so good at fantasy football.
Feeling and not, I know we brought a lot of listeners from this league. Yeah, if
you're
in the league,
guys, and you're listening, we're so happy that you're listening. And I just to assuage you, I do think we're good at fantasy football, but we've definitely had years in the past where we have not been this good. We have hit a little bit of luck, but we made a trade. It made us look so good. We were the highest scoring team in the league last week. We're riding high right now, pal. We're riding high.
Yeah, I'm really happy we made this trade, not only because of the success that it brought in week one or this week. Like I said, when we were talking about it, and it was risky, right, a little bit. But I said I think as a whole, we become stronger as a team. And I think that was only solidified this week. And I get that Pat Freiermuth finally caught a touchdown, and great, and that's not going to ever be a negative thing. But right now, we have one of the leaders at tight end as a whole. I don't know if people realize that when talking about Sam Laporta. We talk about rookie tight ends coming in and struggling to adjust and catch up and whatnot. Sam Laporta, I don't have the statistics. I wish I would have saved it right in front of me. But he's in the top of targets. He's in the top of receptions. And he's in the top of yards. Like, this guy is coming out, and he has just crushed it thus far.
He's the number two overall tight end right now in fantasy. He had 5 targets week 1, 6 in week 2, 11 in week 3, went for 884 and a touchdown. He's getting targeted. He's involved in this offense, and that's why when we made the trade, I was excited about it, even though we had Amon-Ra St. Brown, is that there's a world in which Amon-Ra can keep getting his 8 to 11 targets a game and Laporta can get his 5 to 6, 7, or 8. You know what I mean? There's a world where that offense does that every week. And in the tight end position, a couple of catches is really all you need to be competitive in that matchup. So I love it. And I love our team. I like a lot of the pieces that we have. Do we want to talk about, you know, maybe we need to switch our defense and what's a good streamer defense heading up into this week? Are we looking to add anybody massive right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, just in terms of the ads, right? I mean, it's going to be all over Devon. So it's actually a Chan.
So I really, as I was saying, and I wanted to correct myself because he did say A-Chain.
He came out and said A-Chain. Sure.
What's unfortunate is A-Chain's such a cool sounding name.
It sounds much cooler. But
well, it's the same thing that Tyrod sounds better than Tyrod, but it's Tyrod Taylor instead of Tyrod. So Devon A-Chain, we'll call him the right name on the episode.
Yeah, so this week is really, in my opinion, dominated, other than A-Chain, is dominated by the wide receiver. So you have Josh Palmer because of the Mike Williams issue.
And Quentin Johnson as well, because Quentin one of those Johnson. Receivers is going to get more targets.
Tank Dell has been great with Houston. Yeah. Adam Thielen is coming off games where he's had 23 targets in the last
targeted.
2 games.
He's being targeted, yes.
20, not just target, 23 targets.
Let's also not...
That's insane.
Let's remind the listeners, he was on our team
He was on our team at one point. And Marvin Mims is up there. I don't know.
Okay, so rank of those, all those players you just named, rank who we should put a claim in for from first to third, the top three.
Okay, so like for our team specifically?
I mean...
Or like in general?
I think they're similar, right? I don't think it'd be too different personally.
So are you saying
that it would be A-Chan, but not for us because we have Mostert?
Well, I think A-Chan is the number one ad right now. I don't think he'll have a historic fantasy game like he did in his basically first career game every single week. But I think this offense is built around players like him, right? So I feel like he's the number one waiver ad this week, in my opinion. But not for us, where I feel we are pretty strong at running back, because we have... And again, we keep having this asterisk of having Taylor, right? But we have 4 running backs that are playable, where I guess you can technically play 4 running backs at a time.
So we want to target a receiver. So would you rather have Palmer, Dell, or Thielen? Is that what you're looking at, or are you looking at Mims?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for me, Tank Dell's my number one ad. I think really, and no one's talking about it. I don't want to say nobody, but it feels like no one's talking about it, including us, because we haven't yet. The Texans have been really good this year so far. CJ Stroud is looking, we had debates about but he is crushing it.
You led me into a tidbit here. This is CJ Stroud on third down this year so far. He's first in touchdown to interception ratio, 3-0. First in yards, 397. First in completions, 32. Tied for first in touchdowns, 3. Tied for first in big pass plays of 20 plus yards, 5. He's second in completion percentage at 76, and second in pass rating at 128.8, 153.8, of course, being perfect. He's been awesome. I am eating so much crow right now about my take about CJ Stroud possibly being the bust out of all 4 or 5 that were the top ones. He looks sensational. He looks like he has it. If you watch any of the All-22 film on him, he's just doing elite quarterbacking play. He's been phenomenal. So yes, Tank Dell for me would be the guy that I'd be willing to drop money on. Then it just becomes a question of, do we drop Justice Hill because he's been a little bit banged up and that Ravens running back room is crazy and we talked about not needing running backs as much, or do we drop a guy like, I know we spent money on Njigba, right? So maybe we wait out that a little bit. Do we drop Freiermuth because we don't really need two tight ends, right? That's the debate that happens then.
Yeah, so honestly, in my opinion, and you can disagree, sometimes I think making no moves is the best move. I don't know if I think our team needs a move right now.
So I'm glad you said that because I am the move guy. I always lose my waiver claim because I want to make moves. I agree with that. I like a lot of the players here. I really do. Would I be excited if we had Achane on our team? Yes. Would I be excited if we had Mims or Dell? Yes. I don't think we need to make the move right now this week. I'm also fine with the Pittsburgh Steelers next week against Houston. I know we talked about how great Stroud has looked, right? But I also started earlier in the episode talking about how many offensive line have been banged up for them. Stroud could play completely.
I think Stroud hasn't met a defense
exactly.
yet.
He could play a clean game and still be sacked 8 to 9 times by this defense, and the defense would be fine. So I genuinely do. If I had to say, I would say we stand pat and just let it ride for another week.
I'm all for it. Yeah. You know, honestly, the thing that if we did anything, I was like, we could look at a different kicker, but we don't have to discuss that on. Nobody wants to listen to my fantasy too. Kickers.
Yeah, Cameron so. Dicker the kicker isn't that great for us, so we can move on from that.
Yeah, I made the whiff on going for Justice Hill over Kyren Williams. But I still think Hill is a guy to target right now. With, you know, Gus Edwards got beat up again. Justice Hill was the number two to J.K. Dobbins that came out on the passing downs.
You don't believe in Melvin Gordon?
You
33
me?
Years old. Actually, real quick, fantasy player of the week for you.
Fantasy player of the week, and it is so boring, and I apologize. I get that he just had a historic career day, but I'm going to talk about my guy, and it's Keenan Allen.
And he's been your guy for so long. You've always said that.
You know, Mike Williams goes down, so I get that somebody else will have to step up. You can't just you can't give Keenan 40 targets, but Herbert will go to the guys that he trusts, and Keenan Allen always gets open to provide that. And it's not that he only gets – I mean, he does get open to just get tackled for an 8-yard gain, but he can get out and show wheels and have speed, and he does. And
he's all-around receiver.
He is my perfect receiver. I've really liked what I've seen out of him right now in the Kellen Mond. Did I say that? Is that – No, Kellen.
It's Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore is a Mond is a quarterback
for the Vikings, right?
Actually, he was. I think he signed. I think he's injured now, but he was on the Browns in the preseason. But it's fine.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Well, Vegas, we've seen them give up big plays to receivers. I say fire up Keenan Allen again and do it really confidently.
Yeah, that'll be a crazy game to watch as well. Max Crosby leads the league in pressures in 19, so we'll see what happens when that pressure gets on Herbert and if he can find his guy. Mine, really quick, is James Cook. I think that there are rushing yards to be had against Miami's defense. We didn't really see it last week, but that's because there really wasn't a lot of time to run because the offense was putting up so many numbers. But week one, we saw the Chargers run all over them. And James Cook, the last 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, 17 for 123. Last week, 15 for 98. He's involved in this offense. He's the go-to guy. I do think there will be rushing yards to be had for James Cook this
week. That makes me just talking about a player real quick, and I know we technically have a minute. It just makes me really happy. Like, I know when he got drafted to Buffalo, the joke is that Rock gets drafted to Buffalo and you love him, right? But I just remember being excited about James Cook when we were talking about that running back class. I was like, I know he never technically was a starter at Georgia, but I think he's, like, really good. And I get that on his first career carry, he fumbled and got put in the doghouse a little bit. But I'm just really, really glad to see that he's having success.
You talked me into James Cook early on, and then when it was clear that we were going to move on from Singletary, I got super hyped about him, and he's looked awesome for sure. All right, let's get to our friend's fortune, and then we'll round this episode out, my guy. I'll go first because you went first last week.
All right, here we go.
I've got a pretty fun one, I think, this week. We'll see. Okay, so we're both doing the run out weird. I like that. Okay, so waiting for the door to close. All right, so we're going to go over to London now, and we're going to do our friend's fortune. I'm going to stop that now, but 69 points nice, is the most points ever scored in a London game. I think that that gets broken. And ironically, the most points scored was that 34-31 game where the Jags beat the Bills. So I think in this game against the Atlanta Falcons, I said that we set a new total points record, which is bold because the Falcons don't normally put up that many points. But I think it happens this week. Oh, big stretch from the Colette. You look very sweet. Say hi to the fans. No? Oh, now she's running towards me. I was trying to tell Colette to say hi to the fans, and then I got nervous that you heard me. So I'm going to go now.
For my friend's fortune, I'm going to go to that Cleveland Browns-Ravens game we were talking about. It was Adam's pal's picks. He picked the Ravens. Don't know if I disagree. I haven't just made up my mind on that yet, but I'm going to say that both quarterbacks and both starting – no, and running backs. There will be a touchdown scored by both quarterbacks – and then one for each running back. I don't know if that makes sense.
Ben. All right, well, I'll edit that, and maybe nobody will even know that it happened. They'll be like, what are you talking about, Josh? Didn't see anything.
Great.
What were you daydreaming about?
Yeah, I was just looking out the window, and I was like, okay.
Beautiful weather.
Yeah.
It's fall now. I'm going to make one of these Sundays in October, I'll make chili again. It's going to be very good. All right, pick 'em pool update. I rock. I'm just kidding. But I am winning in the pick'em pool. Right now I have a record of 36-12, but
that's pretty great.
In second place is my cousin Matt with 34-14. So it's very
close.
That's
also good.
In third place we have a friend of mine, Jenny. She plays at my D&D table. So Jenny, if you're listening, you're crushing it.
Way to be, Jenny.
In fourth place is, I don't know if this is my other cousin James or if this is my uncle, but Brownie Elf has 32-16. And then tied for fifth is our Dallas correspondent, Mike Mikas, at 32-16. And our buddy Scott from work, the Commanders fan, 32-16.
Glad that they're paired together.
Yes. So it's very fun. We don't have to talk about who's at the bottom if you don't
okay.
want to.
That's fine.
But we always come back, man. Like I said, I had 15-1 last week, but this week I only went 10-6. So it'd be
that's
crazy.
Super,
a lot of, all these
super
people went
solid.
12-4. It was a really good week for a lot of people in the pool. So. Make sure you get those picks in. Like I said, if you forget a week, trust me, it's fine. I have it set to auto pick the favorites. So if you miss a week, it'll auto pick for you. It'll at least keep you up to date with total games, and you can always make a comeback. So please don't give up. Anything else for you?
That'll do it for me.
My one last tidbit was just to give a shout out to Buffalo Bills, former third round pick last year, Terrell Bernard. The linebacker who replaced Tremaine Edmonds. He became the first player since 2007 with two sacks, interception, and a fumble recovery in a football game. The last two players to do it were Brian Urlacher and James Harrison.
Pretty good company to be with.
To be in.
Yeah, he balled out.
Thanks for listening to the show, guys. Go listen to some Taylor Swift. Enjoy the weekend of football. Make sure to like and comment and subscribe and all that jazz. If you're listening, you know where to find us. God bless.